Good morning. Welcome to Stone Creek. My name is Mike. I'm one of the staff here. I kind of do spiritual formation and anything else that needs to get done. Right now, a lot of our staff and a lot of our people are actually at Camp Wainema because we decided to do camp when there's a big eclipse happening. So if you could pray for traffic this afternoon, that'd be great. Or this evening, or however long it's going to be to get to the coast after third service, I'd appreciate that. I got a question for you as we start off this morning. Have you ever gone to the grocery store and not had enough money? Okay, so you kind of know what that's like. You've ever thought you could afford a cell phone and then they add all those taxes and hidden fees and everything on you? Like, oh, I can afford this cell phone. Oh, $30 worth of taxes? And they do that to us. Have you ever run out of gas on the highway? Even better, have you ever seen a Prius run out of gas on the highway? Because I have to be honest with you, when I see a Prius run out of gas on the highway, there's a little bit of sick, twisted joy. I'm like, yes, ha! And then I go offer to help them and usually mock them. I'm like, you're like a quarter of a mile from the exit. I thought I could make it. You couldn't. Beep, beep. Have fun in your little car. We'll help you out later. And it's funny because when we go on trips, we do all sorts of different things. Heidi is known for just going, Mike, you need gas. Whenever we go on a road trip, I'm like, we'll make it. I don't care the thing said last gas for 13 years. We'll be fine. We will make it. It'll be perfect. And so far, it's been good, but in other times, it hasn't been quite so good. And what happens a lot of times is we just suffer through and we don't plan our trips. We don't plan our trip with Jesus. We sit there and we go, okay, I follow Jesus. I've been washed clean, like we just sang about. But when it comes to getting to know Jesus better, when it comes to actually the gifts that he's given us, the talents and abilities to use in his kingdom, to bless other people, we don't explore those out. We don't explore things out. We just don't plan a relationship with Jesus. We kind of just go, well, cruise control. I've been saved. I've been redeemed. I've been washed clean. And all right, things are good. And yet Jesus, he actually challenges us to do better than that. He actually challenges us to actually live this life that is really different than that. It's this life of serving other people. It's this life of serving him and really going this extra mile to help people follow him, to really feel love. You know, we talk about here that what we're trying to do is learning to love God and love people by following the teachings of Jesus. That's what we as a people, as Jesus' people, are trying to do. We're trying to learn to love God and love people as we're following Jesus' teachings. And a lot of times we fall short on that because it's not all about Jesus to us. It's about a lot of other things, and Jesus might be in there somewhere, but he's not like the Apostle Paul talks about in Colossians 3, Jesus who is your life. And it's interesting, in time, especially when we read the Old Testament Bible, there's all these stories and there's all these accounts of these guys that were just sold out for Jesus. They had went through rough times. They had bad things happen to them, but that didn't stop them from following Jesus. They didn't stop them from going, okay, God, I'll do what you want me to do. And one of those guys is Elijah. Story of Elijah, the account of his life is in 1 Kings and a little bit of 2 Kings. He's actually known for being taken up into heaven by chariots of fire. And he's known for going and denouncing wicked King Ahab and his wife Jezebel, who killed people because those people wanted to follow God. They actually led people into worshiping Baal and other false gods. And Elijah was the guy who kind of stood up to them. And Elijah actually says this to the people of Israel at that time. It's actually a really good message for us today. How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And that's kind of a really good question for us today. How long are we going to keep on just dancing the line? How long are we going to keep on? Well, today I feel like following Jesus and doing what he asked me to do. So everything's good. But now that my taxes took a break, got things going off with my friends and my family, so I'm not going to really follow Jesus' teachings today. And I'll just be over here. But I'll get to them next week. I'll get to them when it's more comfortable for me. And Elijah's like, well, what opinion is it? Are you really sold out for God or are you sold out for yourself? Because we can't worship God and we can't worship ourselves. And what happens is Elijah says, you know what? We're going to have the sacrifice. And you guys, you 450 false prophets and the other 400 false prophets, you guys are going to have a bull over here and build an altar. And you're going to cry out to your God. And if your God actually can make the altar disappear because of fire, then that's the guide you guys should follow. However, I'm going to do the same thing over here, and if my God makes it all disappear because of fire, then that's the real God. Stop dancing. Make a commitment. And so what happens is these guys, they build their altar and they do all these different stuff. And they're out there. And they're yelling at their God, please help us and do this. And Baal, come, oh great Baal. And all this different stuff. And you know what they get? Crickets chirping. Nothing. It's been like 3 hours. And so what Elijah does is he starts mocking them. He starts mocking their God. I know he's not listening. Maybe he's daydreaming. That's it. He must be daydreaming. Stuff might be good. Oh, he ate too much Taco Bell last night, and he's on the toilet. Maybe that's what's happening. Oh, no, perhaps he took a vacation. You know, went to the Caribbean. He'll be back in a couple of years. Maybe he's sleeping. So what happens is these nut jobs, they sit there and they go, they start cutting themselves and cutting each other because blood and ancient practices and different stuff is a way to attract demons. It's a way to do different demonology and stuff like that. And what's happening for like the next 6 hours, they're yelling and they're screaming and they're dancing around cutting themselves and blood's flying and all the stupid stuff. And what's their sacrifice altar doing? The crickets are still chirping. Nothing happens. Elijah repairs the altar at Mount Carmel, and he digs a trench around it, and they take these gallons of water and just pour it and pour it all over the bull and the wood and the rocks, and the trench is full of water. He goes, hey, God. Fire comes down from heaven, licks up the water, destroys the dust, destroys the stones, destroys the wood and the bull and everything. And he's like, ah, behold the power of God. What's interesting in this account of Elijah's life is Jezebel gets really upset and threatens his life. He just had this great aha moment with God. He just had this great mountaintop experience with God, and he runs. He runs and he is afraid. He actually tells his assistant to stay here, and he goes running off into the wilderness another day. And he gets under this broom tree and he falls asleep. But before he falls asleep, he says this to God. This is 1 Kings 19:4. It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers. Roughly 900 people just got showed that their God was fake, plus all the Israelites. God just showed up in mighty ways that we don't quite see today anymore. And circumstances and the threatening of his life and all these things led to him go, God, just take me home. God, just in my life, I'm no better than anybody that's come before me. And so Elijah, who's sleeping under this tree, an angel sent to him and he's given him something to eat and something to drink because God is the God who sustains us, especially when we're going through tough times. He falls back asleep again. He's woken up by the angel of the Lord, which some people say this could be Jesus, and it's eat again, for the journey that you're about to have is a hard one. So he just has this mountain experience, and now it's like you're in this place, but you know what? You're going to have a hard journey. So for 40 days and nights, he's fasting. He's fasting. He's doing a complete fast. Like usually we talk about fasting, we're like, hey, you know, drink some water, maybe some juice and stuff like this. He's not drinking. He's not eating. A complete fast. God's empowering this for 40 days, and he travels to the Mount of God. Now, some scholars believe that the cave that he stays in is the same cave that Moses was staying in when he was up there getting the Ten Commandments. And what's interesting, in this point, God shows his great love for us and for Elijah, and he shows up again. But this is how he does it. He does it differently. There is like a tornado-like wind. And God is not in the wind. There is an earthquake. Has anybody here been in an earthquake? So you know what it's like. And God was not in the earthquake. And there was a fire. Anybody ever here see a big forest fire? Anybody ever here smell a big forest fire? And God was not in the fire. And then there was a... And God was in the gentle breath. He's reminding Elijah that when you breathe in and you breathe out, you're breathing me. You're saying my name without the vowels. And so he talks to Elijah and he gives him some orders like anoint kings and anoint Elisha as your partner who will help you in your things and who actually is going to be your future replacement. But it's interesting that Elijah has these good times with God and he has these hard times with God and he still follows God. And the thing is, that is our Christian journey. We're going to have some great times with God. Hopefully this week, kids are going to have some great times with God. We know high school week, junior high week, kids had some great times with God. But then reality happens. Bills happen. Relationship issues happen. Different things happen that goes, well, God, why do bad things happen to good people? And he's like, bad things happen to bad people too. Bad things happen. It's part of being a disciple. And being a disciple really means that you're a learner. And when these bad things happen, it's, don't give up on me. Don't give up on God. Walk through them. There's an illustration. This young girl, she's learning how to drive from her dad, and they're in Texas. And there's a giant storm starting to happen. And I don't know if you've ever been in the Midwest and stuff like that, but the storms out there are crazy. Like black sky noon storms. And so it starts raining a little bit. And she's like, okay, I'll be fine. Dad, you'll be fine, daughter. It's all good. And they start driving a little bit farther, and the rain gets heavier. And you know, back there, it can rain so hard that your windshield wipers are like useless. And starts to get that. And he's like, just keep going. Just keep going. And so it starts to hail a little bit. And that's when the truckers start pulling off, and the motorcyclists are pulling off and getting under the overpass and stuff like that. And he's like, just keep going. You're in the storm, just keep going. And it's a really bad storm, and she's getting nervous, and she's sitting there, and she's holding on with white knuckles, and she's scared, and her eyes are big. And then all of a sudden, it's blue skies. Why did you have me keep on driving through the storm? Because you're through the storm. If you were stopped along the way, you'd still be stuck in the storm. Keep going. Winston Churchill said this, when you're going through hell, keep going. And a lot of times what happens is that we forget to focus on Jesus. We forget to focus on things that he'd have us to do. And we get focused on the storms, we get focused on the problems instead of just following him and loving him. See, Elijah, when he found Elisha, he went to him and he put his cloak on him. And then he kept on walking. And basically that was a sign, take it or leave it. You can take this mentor, you can take this call on your life, or you can leave it alone. And God, in his great love for us, he gives us choices. Jesus lets you choose how much you will follow him. He lets us choose to serve him or not. He lets us choose to love him or not. He lets us choose to obey him or not. Now, there's rewards and consequences to the choices that we make. But the thing is, in his love, he still gives us choice. And why is this so important? Is because 67% of people right now say that Christians are just kind of mean, nasty people. Gandhi is known for saying that he likes Jesus, but his followers, not quite great people. And part of that happens is because we don't count the cost of following Jesus. When we sing songs, especially if you grew up in the church, trust and obey for there's no other way. We go, oh, trust at times, obey. Who's Jesus to tell me what to do? And Jesus wants us to know that the things that get in your way of relationship with me, like your ego and your selfishness and our pride and our anger and our jealousy and our lust and our low self-esteem and all these things, he says, you know what? Just follow me. Just follow me. It's not always going to be easy, and at times you'll have peace that you don't understand, but it's worth it and it's challenging. Jesus describes the kingdom of heaven like a great banquet. A man decides to hold a big party for people. Everybody's inviting. He invites these people, and this is what they say to him. And this is in Luke chapter 14. This is what they say. He invites him. He says, the kingdom is ready. And this is what they say to him, Luke 14, verse 18. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I have bought a field, and I must go out and see it. Please have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen. I go to examine them. Please have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So the servant goes and tells the master what's happening. And the master's like, invite other people. But it's interesting that these guys make excuses. Well, I got a business deal going on. That's more important than the kingdom of heaven. I just bought some ox. I got to go check them out. Well, didn't you check them out before you bought them? I mean, don't we usually check out things before we buy them? Like, oh, what are reviews on Yelp? Oh, this is a car. Maybe I should see what Consumer Reports says about it. And it's interesting because he uses his animals as an excuse not to do things for Jesus, not to join in the kingdom of heaven. I kind of thought about, you know, we had this lady in one of our apartments when we lived in Mukilteo. She had like 13 cats. Call them crazy cat ladies. And she's like, and this is Mike's, I'm making this up, so it's not like truth, but it's a good story. And she's like, oh, Mitzi, what do you want me to do today? Mitzi's like, meow. Oh, you want me to brush your teeth instead of go to church? Okay, it's time to brush the cat's teeth. You know, I'd go serve at church this Wednesday night and help the teenagers out, but Waffles the cat would get lonely. And it's better that I go and stay with Waffles the cat than to go out and help other people. This third guy uses his family. My wife won't let me come. Basically what he says, I just got married. I can't come. First of all, we need to talk about marriage relationship there. Secondly, I don't know of a single woman yet, and I could be wrong, that if they got an all expense paid, fancy dinner, including the dress and everything else, at a big mansion, would say no. Everything's taken care of, everything you need. Yeah, the limo's there, the horse-drawn carriages are there, everything you need, your favorite food, all these great things. No, I'd rather yarn tonight. I'd rather knit. Yes, dear, whatever you'd have me do, dear. We forget it's a cost of following Jesus. We forget there's a cost of following Jesus. He says this in verse 25 in Luke 14. He says this, now great crowds accompanied him, and he turned to them and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. That's the line in the sand. That's a line in the sand. Now, a lot of times we focus in on that word hate because Jesus tells us to love our enemies, pray for those that persecute us. Don't hate people. He's using this as an illustration. He's not saying really hate people. That goes against for God so loved the world, loving God, loving people like Jesus taught. He's saying that your love for me should be so much that when people compare it to your love for your closest people, who should be your relatives, your blood relatives, your friends, even your family that are not blood relatives, that it appears that you hate them compared to your love for me. That's the bar following Jesus. That's the line. Your most important relationship is not that with your spouse, with your kids, with your coworkers, or your friends. Your most important friendship is with Jesus. The line has been drawn and really comes to, you know, what do we worship? Do we worship making our parents happy or making Jesus happy? Do we worship making our wives happy? Now, I know there's that new age teaching right now, happy wife, happy life. How about happy Jesus, happy life? In society, we worship sports and kids' sports and fame and celebrity, and we worship being busy. People need to learn to love and to worship Jesus. And how can we tell what we worship? What do you spend your time doing? What gets your financial resources? What gets your talents, your abilities? Where are you focusing them on? Other Christ followers, people that don't know Jesus Christ? Or just whistling Dixie and do what you want to do with it? What we worship shows what we put value to. Who gets your worship? Who gets your treasures? Who gets your time? Who gets your talents? Jesus is saying, this is worthy stuff, but are you worshiping these other things instead of me? Are these other things more important to you instead of me? Because he gives us bigger challenge in verse 27. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. That becomes even bigger because now what he's saying is, if you really love me, you're willing to die for me. And Matthew says it this way, Matthew 16:24. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his life? Or what shall a man give in return for his life? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. Truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. He just raised the bar. He made even more. He's sitting there saying, are you willing to deny your wants, your pleasures, your desires? Are you willing to do these things to follow Jesus? He taught people how to pray. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. A prayer of submission, a prayer of following Jesus. And then he talks about this idea of take up your cross and follow me. And we take this a lot of times in modern teachings and stuff, say, well, I have a cross to bear. Your cross to bear is not that your husband snores really loud at night. It's not your loud neighbor. It's not that your bills are out of control, or that your kids are acting up, or your body is falling apart, or you get speeding tickets because those cops are out there looking for you. What Jesus means is this. I'm a dead man walking. I'm on the green mile. I am on death row. See, Jesus knew, and the people that followed him, especially in the first century, they knew that the cross to bear meant, I'm willing to die. When Jesus was going through the streets, when people were mocking him, laughing at him, throwing things at him, when he's walking around already beaten, he literally was bearing part of the cross. That's what he's talking about. Are you willing for people to make fun of you, to follow me? Are you willing for people to not understand you, to lie about you, to betray you, to follow me? That's what he's talking about discipleship. That's what he's talking about being his learner by following after him. He's saying, these are the questions. These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. Are we willing to do these things, be paraded around naked like a criminal, and be humbled and be lied about and be betrayed and have his family for a while? Jesus' even family thought he was nuts. That's the cost of following Jesus. And what gets in the way of that? What distractions this morning are in the way of us following Jesus? So what I really like here is that he encourages us in Matthew, and he says this in verse 27. For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he'll repay each person according to what he has done. Isn't that awesome? The good things that we do, the good things that you do, the good things that you do that follow Jesus Christ, that help people learn about God, learning to love God, learning to love people by following the teachings of Jesus. These good things, Jesus goes, you're going to get rewarded. You're going to be repaid for this good stuff that you're doing. But Jesus, when did I see you sick? When did I see you naked? When did I see you afraid? When did I see you in prison? It was as you're doing for the other people, you're doing it for me. As you feed the homeless person, you're feeding me. As you clothe the homeless person, you're clothing me. As you're helping your brothers and sisters and out in your church family, you're doing that to me. And he reminds us, we reap what you sow. What you do, you sow. And it's wonderful to know that as we're doing these good things, as we're doing these spiritual things, as we're doing the things that Jesus would have us to do, he goes, thanks for living a life all about me. Because in the end, for all of us, it's all about Jesus. And what he does back in Luke 14 is he gives us some practical examples to think about as we try to follow him. Now this is verse 28. For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether there is enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going out to encounter another king in war will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes and gets him with 20,000. And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. It's good to talk practical. Here's a guy building a house. I got the foundation laid, got the framework up. That's all I can do. He overcommitted. He didn't talk to other people to see if he had enough to do this stuff. He overcommitted. And the truth is there are a lot of Christians today right now that are overcommitted. We say yes to everything because we feel guilty if we say no. We feel guilty if we say no to the things that Jesus wants us to say no to so that other people can actually serve him. We don't have the healthy boundaries in this way. And so what happens is that we have people that are committing to 2 or 3 or 5 or 6 or 20 different ministries, and they're not doing them with excellence. They're not doing them with their first fruits. They're doing them with their leftovers. And God deserves our first fruits. He deserves the best that we have to offer him and to other people. Nobody should be serving in 2 or 3 ministries when other people are serving in none. Nobody should be serving in 2 or 3 ministries when other people are serving in none. Now, there's blue cards in the back of your chairs. If you'd like to fill those out and put them in the boxes, that's fine. I'll be at camp this week. And so is Tim, so it'll be great. But the truth is about 10 to 20% of any church in America carries the load. That's why we have burnout. That's why we have people not experiencing the joy of Jesus Christ, is because nobody steps up and, not nobody, a lot of people don't step up and serve in the ways that God's created them. And if you don't know how God's created you, call me. Call Tim. Let's get together. Let's have lunch. We have different tests and different things that you can do, different talents and abilities that we can talk about and find places for you to serve. Because what happens is a lot of times that people just keep serving, and they forget it's all about Jesus, and then other people aren't serving, and they forget it's all about Jesus, and all of a sudden what happens is burnout, and, oh, it's Mike calling. What does he want? What thing does he need me to volunteer for next? Nothing. I was just calling to see if I could pray for you. But that's what people get used to, is because we're desperately looking for people to step up and serve Jesus and his church. And then people go, you know, I have faith and you have works and all these other things that Jesus' brother James talks about. And your faith without works, as the Christian poet Rich Mullins once said, is about as useless as a screen door on a submarine. Your faith, you have faith in Jesus Christ, without doing the things that Jesus would have you do, is as useless as a screen door on a submarine. We tell Jesus, yes, I'll follow you. Then our life becomes, it's all about following Jesus. All about doing the things that he'd have me do. And sometimes in our life, that means that we ask for advice. That's what he's talking about with this king. That's what he's talking about, this king that's getting ready to go out to war. I got 10,000 soldiers. That guy's got 20,000 soldiers. What should I do? Now, guys, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been wrong and your wife been right? Okay. Guys are going no, and women are like, oh, smack. You liar. So we're in Montana, and Heidi and I were having this conversation because we're trying to save electricity. We're trying to be good stewards of our money and of our resources. And my thought was, when you leave a room, leave the lights on, because it takes more power to have them heat up. And in old days, some of the older lights used to take more power to have them heat up and down. Now, Heidi's dad's an electrician, and she's like, no, you just turn them off and turn them back on. It's fine. And so we Google it. And I was wrong. See, that's on tape too, guys. I actually admit, one guy can admit to being wrong. And what happened is that in our lives, we think that we're right all the time, but a lot of times we need to Google out things. We need to research things. We need to sit there and go, okay, what's the best advice? And the Bible even talks about having a lot of counselors will lead to success. And the biggest counselor is God. Jesus, what do you want me to do? Jesus, what do you want me to pray about? Jesus, how do you want me to serve other people? How do you want me to serve you? Jesus, what would you have me do? Because he said that thing in verse 33 that's really hard and it's really challenging. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. What are the things we need to rip off our backs? What are the weights that are carrying us, that are tearing us apart, that are tearing us down? Because following Jesus means sacrifice. Elijah feared for his life and he still followed Jesus. Elisha, who is a replacement, left his rich family and followed Jesus. Peter and Andrew and James and John, they left their family businesses to follow Jesus. What's Jesus asking us this morning to leave, to follow him?